The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
That's right, it's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Coming to you on a special edition, a Tuesday night edition, because the GW-UVA game on Monday night. We want you to hear the whole show, not some shortened 15-minute version leading up to the game. And so we pushed it back to Tuesday. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. We're glad to be in here with you, especially after a big Washington blowout beatdown of the New Orleans Saints. Sent them back to Louisiana.
It's a different kind of
blood.
Show.
A different show. One we haven't done since we started the show.
A blowout show.
A beat-down blowout show. It's our first one, so this is a big deal for us. It's our first in two seasons, our first big-time beat-down blowout show. 47-14 at home over the Saints. The fourth straight home win. 4-5 on the year. Second place in the NFC East. Touchdowns all over the place. Kirk Cousins throwing four touchdowns, no interception. The defense getting a pick six. Touchdowns everywhere. Yeah. And I'm excited about it. Kevin's not.
I'm not that excited about it, man. You know what? That's good. Everything you said was true. Everything you said was true. Yeah. But I'm saying, right, I feel kind of unfulfilled, right? You know, I understand the four touchdown passes, but I attribute it, like I said earlier, man, it's like going to a fancy restaurant and just eating your heart out, eating everything you see. Everything looks so good. You eat, but you're still hungry afterwards, man. You had to stop at Burger King and get you some fries or something, right? Yeah, they did exactly what they were supposed to do, because too many times in the past, this team would play down to the level of their competition. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do that with the Saints, because the Saints were putrid yesterday. The Saints were horrible. The Saints were, we were talking off the air about the legend of the Ryan family. About,
you know what?
And about this, Buddy and Rex and Joe, whatever the
and
rest
I've
of them
got
are.
So much past tension built up about Rob Ryan. This whole Rob Ryan is a defensive genius. Where do people get that from? Like, how in the world did he become some defensive expert? All of it. Like, you know, so he goes to Dallas. He's supposed to transform that Dallas defense, and they've got all kind of exotic blitzes. And that the defense used to routinely get beat deep off blitzes that never get to the quarterback. I mean, routinely get beaten. And then he goes to the Saints, and he's supposed to be the difference maker. Finally going to get the Saints defense to match, you know, the power of Drew Brees on the offense, and they're going to have this great defense, and they can't tackle. Like, their defense is horrible.
Was Ryan Ryan the coach when Marshawn Lynch like ran over the whole team? And some guys he ran over twice. You know, he went back and was looking for guys he didn't run over.
Where in the world do these people think that?
You know what? It's the legend of Buddy Ryan. You know, Buddy Ryan was a fabulous football coach, man, a fantastic coach. And you just felt like genetically that some of that stuff would pass on to Rex and Rob. You just felt that way. But it's just not produced. It's not happening.
And some people get these reputations, like. Even in college football, I look at Everett Golston, who was playing quarterback for Notre Dame, and then he goes to Florida State. And like, Florida State's going to realize why Notre Dame, you know, didn't want him to be the star. Like, where do people get these expectations or these reputations that some folks are just better than what they've actually proven that they are?
Well, apparently the Burgundy and Gold had some film on these Rob Ryan defenses, because they don't practice tackling. And, you know, like, there's been some changes in the league, you know, with the new collective bargaining agreement, and, you know, you don't have to hit. You don't play in pads. You don't hit as much as you used to. The Saints have apparently taken advantage of that.
Right. They don't hit at all in practice.
They don't hit at all in practice. They don't hit in the games.
Eventually, the league's going to go to touch football, and so the Saints are just prepping for that now.
Yeah. The Saints are ahead of the game.
Once they go to touch football, the Saints are going to be the greatest defense.
Okay, but let's not take anything away from the effort of the boys in Burgundy yesterday, because they came to play. They came to play. Now, sometimes when they come to play, it doesn't work out this well, but they took full advantage of this game. And in a game that started out as a shootout.
Right.
Just a score back and forth.
You know what? I'll tell you what.
They stayed with it.
They stayed with it. And, you know, before we even get to the X's and O's, you know, you hit on something right there. The boys came to play. And before we even talk about any play that we see as a turning point in the game or was you know, almost like a kind of a tempo setter or anything like that, let's just talk about the emotion of the team. You know, they had the bye week, and then they came out flat. I'm not even expecting them to beat New England, but but not to come out as flat as they came out, especially off of a bye week, and they came out flat. I thought it was important to come back home and against the Saints at least come out and look like you haven't given up. Come out and look like you're here to win this game and you're here to not salvage a season, but make a season out of this. I mean, look, you're second in the division at the time, third in the division. You have a chance to go up to second in the division, or at least tie with Philadelphia for second in the division. Come out ready to play. Come out with some fire in your belly. And that's exactly what the team did. And so from just that standpoint, before we even get to all the other plays and all the other kind of stuff, you know, and talk about the 47 points to the offense, well, the 40 points from the offense because 7 was on that pick 6, but talk about all the points put up. Let's just talk about just the emotional part and the team actually being there and ready to play.
Well, why weren't they ready to play against the Patriots? Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. And that's the excitement of playing the game sometimes should be enough to motivate a player. But you got 26 coaches. They got to help, too. Right. It's a package deal, right? You know, because you're playing for the colors. You heard that expression sometimes. Is you're playing for the number on the front, not the name on the back. You know, it's a package deal. You shouldn't have to motivate guys to play. But then then you do. You do. You know, that's part of being a professional coach, coaching professional athletes. These guys have been, not just with the Burgundy and Gold, all these guys have been pretty much pampered their whole lives, right? Because they've been had the advantage of being a good athlete, right? And good athletes are pampered, right? They don't have to do. John Reagan used to call it being institutionalized. Because you don't have to do anything. You don't have to say when you got to be anywhere. You don't have to figure out when you got to wake up. You don't have to figure out what you're going to eat. But it's that emotion that you're talking about, that's the key factor.
Right.
And you all have to be on one accord. You all have to have the same emotion, pulling the same way. And that's what we saw yesterday. It's been rare, but we saw that.
And the good thing is that they pulled it together, because after the first kickoff, I mean, you almost had this, up here we go again with the penalties and stuff like that. And you made that observation early, Kevin.
Yeah. They lost the toss. The Saints won the toss, and I was saying, thank goodness we start off with the ball first, because it's easier to score with the ball than it is without. Yeah, as they prove, you can score without the ball, but it's easier to score with the ball.
Right.
But on the kickoff, the guy ran the ball out to the 10-yard line for some reason and tried to reverse field and go backwards and moonwalk and all that. Ended up on the 10 with the holding call. With a holding call. And it started out a tremendous hole. But being at the game, I was able to observe. I don't know if you saw it on TV.
By the way, you know, Kevin being at the game, we're going
to
talk about that in the next second.
Yeah.
We're
going to
get
so
the whole fan experience
so
there from Kevin's point of view. Yeah. I haven't been in the game in years, but
so
I can't wait to hear that.
This was a good perspective, because when it was 3rd and 4 from maybe the 6-yard line or something, they went 4 wide with DeSean Jackson on a wideout. And the Saints were playing man defense with no deep help.
Well, that's the genius of Rob Ryan.
That's the genius of Rob. They said, they'll never expect this.
They'll never expect they will go man. They won't know what to do.
And so Kirk saw this, because everybody was saying, DeSean's open. DeSean's
Before
open.
The play starts, he's open. One-on-one.
And unhealthy DeSean Jackson beat the guy deep for like 47 yards.
Right. And that, I think, was like the tempo setter of the
game. They had to change the defense after that. And doing that, and we've heard all week, you know, with DeSean comes back, it's going to open up the running game. In this case, it did, because they had to bring a safety back. They had to, and it opened up things for Alfred Morris tremendously. We're going to talk about him, too.
And it opened things for Alfred Morris, but it also opened other things underneath. And when you've got a team like the Saints that are a horrible tackling team, horrible underneath, and the linebackers can cover it, it opens up everything underneath. And you saw the Redskins take advantage of that. And so, I mean, look, we've criticized the play calling here on this show plenty of times, but I think they got a lot of it right now. How much of it was actually the Saints not being able to tackle, you know, one will never know. I mean, that's like, you know,
they can't tackle.
What comes first, the chicken or the egg?
They surely can't tackle.
They can't tackle, but the Redskins also had to make plays. And talking about making plays, Kirk Cousins, we've been hard on him here when he's deserved it. But look, he played great Sunday, 20 for 25, 324 yards, no interceptions, which were key, and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, Kirk hit the open man. I'll give him that. And that's part of any offense. You got to hit the open man, and Kirk was doing that. And you know, they hit the open man. He hit like Matt Jones for a 1-yard pass. Matt caught the ball after 1 yard, ran 74 yards. It goes in Kurt's stats for a 75-yard touchdown pass, right? You know, so that's why I'm saying I want to take this with a grain of salt. They did what they were supposed to do, but you got to give the Saints credit for
being a bad team.
Yeah, that was a very bad team. You're supposed to beat a bad team. You're supposed to beat a bad team badly, and they did. They did,
and that's exactly what they did. And I think that's what they needed. They did to the Saints what the Patriots did to them the week before,
exactly.
Except worse, because you know. Because even though the Patriots looked like they were kind of on cruise control last week, but it was a great win by the Redskins. So they go to 4-5, second in the East. Look, we know what the expectations were heading into this season. If you were to talk to us or to any, you know, logical fan, and I know sometimes it's hard to find an actual logical fan, but if you were to ask anybody. Mm-hmm. In August, when there was so much drama regarding the quarterback situation, no one knew how good the offensive line would be because that was going to be a big question. They've played great this season compared to what we thought would happen. You know, you talk about after 9 games being 4-5, second in the East, 1 game back from the Giants. I think anybody would have taken that.
You know, what was a paramount for this team is to not start another season 3-6. Mm-hmm. You know how many times we've seen 3-6 in this town? That was, as a matter of fact, we got some audio, post-game audio from some of the guys from Trent Williams, as a matter of fact, talking about how important that was. That was critical and crucial for the career of the head coach, number one, right? because you got to promise, you got to give us some hope, right?
Right.
You know, you got to give the team some hope. You got to say, what we're doing here is working if we stick with it. Me personally, being the aficionado of RG3 as I am, I'm listening to this and I'm just wondering why then weren't we that patient with RG3 to give him a chance to grow into it and let it work for him, because that's what they asked him to do for Kirk, just to stick with it and eventually it'll work for him. But apparently there was something there that he just refused to let that happen, right? You know,
yeah.
And it's showing Kirk is going to progress. I heard Danny Cannella, ESPN analyst, said that Kurt was one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now.
What?
Yeah, that's what he said. Now, whether he's talking about the lack of skills in the league at this particular time or the multitude of skills that Kurt has is one or the other.
Maybe he's talking about yesterday he played like a top 10 quarterback.
Well,
in the league.
Did,
I'm looking,
yesterday.
I can name 10 quarterbacks that this team could use right now that's better than
anybody who plays against the Saints is a top 10 quarterback.
Right.
So, someone brought this up to my attention.
Unless
today.
Your name is Matt Castle.
For the past 3 weeks,
Brandon.
For the past 3 weeks, whoever played the Saints have had the best games of their career. They've reached their personal best in yardage playing against the Saints, right? And again, that's what you're supposed to do. I will remind folks that last year, this time, Kirk was number 3. Three on the depth chart. Colt McCoy saw a little action yesterday. They sort of snuck him in without announcing he was coming.
Well, you talk about Kirk Cousins. I mean, here's a quote from yesterday. He says, and I quote, "I'm getting better as a quarterback."
Thank God for small favors, Kirk.
Thank you for getting better as a quarterback, Kirk. 47-14, the Washington Redskins over the New Orleans Saints. This is a new show for us, you know, on the Federal Football Report. Again, a blowout beatdown show. And so we're trying to learn how you do this.
Yeah,
you know, how exciting do you get as analysts on a beatdown recap?
Well, we can go on down the line. Let's talk about the offense and give them some dues, right?
Absolutely.
You know, the offensive line. Offensive line played a great game.
I think the offensive line has been kind of an underrated story this whole season. Given the expectations in the offseason, I think that they've played week in and week out better than we've expected them to play, defending as far as a run blocking, and their pass protection has been better, I think, than we've expected it to be all year.
Scott McClendon came to town and he realized that and anybody who follows Burgundy and Gold knows that was a weak point of this team, right? He realized that's why they made Sheriff the number one pick, right? Well, the number one for this team. They realized that they needed to. For years, they've neglected this offensive line. When Shanahan came to town, he addressed it, but he addressed it getting players that were nimble enough to play that zone blocking scheme, who could laterally move, but not have that force and that aggression, right? It's going to take Bill Callahan, who's done wonders at Dallas, who took a nothing offensive line
and
made
it
into a bunch of all pros, because Dallas was predicted to be in last place last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that and made DeMarco Murray a millionaire.
Basically.
right?
And if you look at the offensive line of Dallas right now, they've been underwhelming. I mean, one of the hopes after Romo had gotten hurt that Brandon Whedon would be able to carry the team was the fact that he'd have tons of time to pass and that he wouldn't be rushed, and that the offensive line and the running back situation would be able to carry the team through, and he would just have to make 3 to 4 passes a game that would mean something. And now one of the running backs that started with the team when Romo was hurt, Joseph Randle, he's out of the picture. And Brandon Whedon's out of the picture. Now Matt Castle has been playing for the last 3 games. They haven't won a game since Romo's been out. And so, you know, how much of that was the coaching from
Well, we got to thank you and Dallas for that gift. You know, we appreciate that. We just thank you so much. You know, we don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Right, right.
We'll take it. Yeah, the receivers, like I said, Deshaun, the big play to Deshaun early was key. They're not utilizing him correctly. I think that you know how you have every receiver running every route. You're wasting DeSean Jackson with an underneath route. You're wasting him. DeSean is not a big guy. If you see DeSean Jackson up close and personal, he's not a big guy. And you're wasting his talent sending him underneath, right? You're just going to get him hurt again. He was injured a couple of times Sunday in the game, I think. Pierre Garçon was sort of missing in action yesterday, which I don't know if his age is finally showing on Pierre. But
you know, him and Kirk just never really seemed to have like a thing going on. You know what I mean? Like, it could just be not being targeted a lot. Like, I mean, when you look at it, look, from Jackson, Jordan Reed's a favorite, and Crowder's a favorite of Cousins. It could just be he's just not looking for Garçon.
Yeah, it you know, it's hard to tell without being in the meeting rooms, but sometimes it's like maybe Garçon's the first option and Kirk just comes off the first option going through his progressions too. The Falcons game, he seemed to hook up with Pierre quite a bit, but Sunday it just wasn't happening. But still, the receivers were going downfield. There's a lot of run blocking. That's something else I noticed. The receivers, like, they don't block with aggression. They know they make contact, but it's almost like they bump into a guy and say, "Excuse me," afterwards, right? It's got to get a little bit more nastiness, and I think that has to come from Kirk.
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, when you look at it, like you said, that's how it come from Kirk. You're talking about the receivers. You know, what we saw yesterday, you know, again, with DeSean Jackson in the lineup for the first time, I mean, is this what this offense can be? And I understand, like, the Saints' defense is horrible, but is this more of what you can expect when you have a healthy DeSean Jackson, a healthy Jordan Reed? You've got Pierre Garçon. You've got Jamison Crowder. You've got the running game going. Is this what you can expect from this offense?
It depends on how the quarterback goes. Now, again, they were playing the putrid Saints.
We're going to find out next week against the Panthers.
Yeah. So, and it comes from preparation, too. You know, the coaches got to develop a game plan, and they got to think of something that was going to stop, like, the Panthers. Like, 9 teams have tried to stop the Panthers so far, and none of them have succeeded, right? We'll see how effective it is. But the confidence is such a big part of it, too.
Because
no matter who the other team was, you just threw 4 touchdown passes. So you got to feel like,
you know, I can do this on Sunday.
Like a certain quarterback had the nerve to say, you know, I got to feel like I'm the best quarterback in the world, right? You know, how dare he say that or think that, right? But, you know, you need to get some of that and rub some of that on you, because you got to feel like you're a world beater, and you got to make the other guys on the team feel like you're a world beater, too.
Right. Yeah. Well, they'll have an opportunity next week against the undefeated Carolina Panthers in Carolina, and so, you know, you'll always get, you know, in-depth coverage and analysis of that game here on the Federal Football Report, 1500 AM, and also on online at federalnewsradio.com. Let's talk about the defense, because it seemed as if we were going to get into a shootout in the first quarter. Like, oh, it's going to be a high-scoring game. It's going to be something like a 45-42 win or loss one way or the other. Until the defense buckled down. The Saints got that 14 points and did not score again. And we're not talking about, again, not to pick on not to beat a dead horse, but we're not talking about Matt Castle or Brandon Wheaton in Dallas. We're talking about Drew Brees.
You mentioned him quite a bit, I know. Right.
And so the defense buckled down after the first 14 points from the Saints.
Well, a couple of things. You know, yesterday, Keenan Robinson was out due to injury, and Will Compton got the start yesterday. Now, Keenan's a good player. Keenan is the defensive quarterback. He calls the plays. But I've always liked Compton's football instincts. He's always around the ball. He's got to be around the ball in defense. You got to be has toward the ball. And so I believe him being in the game adds something. I think Perry Riley Jr. is not having his best season. Although he came up a big play late yesterday. I think that the addition of Compton meant a lot yesterday to the defensive front in terms of calling the signals and to defending the running game. Because, like you said, it was a shootout early. Drew Brees caught off a couple of play-action looks. But for some reason, they stopped doing that. They went back to the dink and dunk. And Drew doesn't have a lot of weapons. I mean, I don't know if you can name any of the receivers.
Besides Colston, they're not the Saints that we're used to seeing. Does not have a ton of weapons to throw to. You know, that's such a great point.
I mean, Ben Watson is like 50 years old, right? You know, it's like, you know. So.
Yeah, no, you're right. Drew Brees held to 19 of 28, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. And you talk about the defense. I mean, to be able to get those turnovers, I mean, that was huge, especially that pick 6. I mean, that was the icing on the cake. The Skins were already up big at that point, but then to that really put the game away and said, you know, we're going to put the nail in the coffin. It's time to go back to Louisiana with this beatdown.
Yeah, you know, but that was a third and one situation, and the Saints came out in the shotgun, mm-hmm. and I don't know when it became popular in this league to go to the shotgun on third and one. Mm-hmm. That's short yardage.
We've been talking about that.
That's triple tight end situation.
You know,
right,
it's like, where are the G's? You know what I mean? Who are just going to man up, man to man, push your man 1 yard back? Because you always say this: if your offensive line can't get you 1 yard, what in the world are you doing? Yeah, why even have an offensive line?
This guy if
we're
can't
here.
Give you a
we
yard.
Just need 1 yard. Push that guy in front of you back 1 yard. You teach that in Pee Wee League. You know what I mean? It's funny because you see so many teams opting in these short situations to pass, and I think it's because we're such a pass happy league. And then even when you get to the running scheme, so many teams go into this zone read stuff that you know, when a guy's just going to be able to man up and get this 1 yard, you know, mm-hmm. and so many people are hesitant, and it gets to out. Everybody wants to be a genius. Yeah. Everybody wants to be, you know, Rob Ryan, a genius or something, even though they aren't, even though they haven't proved that they're a genius. Everybody wants to be a genius. Everybody wants to scheme, you know, and be fancy and all that, you know. And Rick Doc Walker talks about this all the time. Just somebody get nasty.
Right.
Get me a dirty yard at third and one when I need it, and let's move the ball down
that's
the field.
That's
and you
all talk
about it, and this is the time that you need it when it's November. December's coming. You know, it's going to get cold here on the East Coast, you know, and you're going to need to play that pound game and be able to muscle up, whether it's on defense or offense. And that third and one shotgun stuff, which, you know, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well,
you got to be
Saints,
able to pound the ball.
The Saints play indoors anyway. They play in living rooms and stuff like that, right? So, but, you know, Bergman Gold took advantage of it. Golston took advantage of the tip drill and just, you know, easily. It wasn't even hard for him, man.
Right.
But you know, you got to give credit to the defense. You got to give credit to these guys who did what they were supposed to do. They got burned a couple of times early, but they buckled down and played the way that they were supposed to play against an inferior opponent.
It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. 47-14, the Washington Redskins with their fourth straight home win, 4-5 on the season. They send the Saints back with a beatdown back to New Orleans. We get a chance to do a blowout show. I'm excited about a second place in the East in a winnable NFC East, one game back of the Giants with a game with the Giants coming up and another game against the Eagles, two games against Dallas. Man, I don't know, Kevin.
That's
we might have a playoff show this year.
That's
Who
all
knows?
You want. That's
we,
all you
we
want
may have
is
a
shot.
And look, say what you want. And before we get to the fan experience, I want to ask this question to you. Yeah, you know, look, grand scheme of things, what does this win mean? We don't know. We beat a bad team. You know what I mean? And the schedule does get tougher from here on out because even though the Cowboys, you had 2-7, but you're playing, but you know, Romo's back. But who, you know, why would you expect them to win every single game? So we'll talk about that. They're still winnable games. And even the Giants will be
got
tough.
A shot.
So it's a tougher schedule coming up, but like you said, we have a shot.
Got a shot.
So before we go to the next segment where you'll talk about your fan experience there at the game, what does this win mean? How should you, as a logical fan, because we know that the fans out there now talking about the Super Bowl. We get that. That's going to happen all the time. But as a logical fan, what does this win mean?
It should mean to a true logical fan that we're looking forward to games against the Eagles now because we're looking forward to sweeping the Eagles. We're looking forward to revenge against the Giants. And of course, last but certainly not least, we're looking for not only a sweep, but a double beatdown of Pokes, right?
Uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
We got to beat the Cowboys. All of us a moot point if we don't beat the Cowboys. Right.
So, I mean, it looks like you're looking at a team that, hey, a tough game last week, but they were able to bounce back and put together a great performance against the Saints. Nobody mailed it in. And that, you know, hey, coming into the season, I thought that 8-8 or 7-9 would be a successful year if there was progress shown. I think that you saw progress from the offensive line this year so far. You've seen progress from the defense, who've had times of looking horrible themselves, but especially stopping the run and the secondary, but they've played better than expected, I think. And so I think that you know, look, you win three or four out of the remaining games. You finish 8-8. Maybe even that might be enough to win the division in a bad year. Maybe even 9-7. And you see what happens. I think you're looking at what could be considered a successful year, and especially after all the drama off season, especially right around the start of the season. That's not bad. That's not a bad thing to wish for.
That's why I'm still
or to even have.
That's
so
why
we'll
I'm
see.
Not full yet.
Yeah, we'll
not
see. I mean, I don't want to get too excited, but because they could go to Carolina and get blown out, and then we're feeling down in the dumps again. But anyway, we're going to enjoy this blowout Tuesday because a special edition, special night for the Federal Football Report because of the GW game on Monday. We're here on Tuesday night, 47-14 of Redskins 4-5 after beating the Saints. We'll come back. Kevin's going to talk about the grand fan experience. We're going to talk about what it was like for Kevin at the game coming up next.
WFED.
And now back to Claude and Kevin and the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. You know, they aren't half bad for a couple of old guys.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report, a Tuesday night blowout beatdown of the Saints edition of the Federal Football Report, 47-14 for the fourth straight home win for the Redskins, 4-7 on the year, second place in the NFC East. Kirk Cousins, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, the defense scoring touchdowns. We're just feeling good all over the place. Hey, Kevin was there to witness the game live. You know, it's not, you know, we don't get to go to all the, you know, all the games. I haven't been to a game, man, in probably 2 years. I think it's been 2 years. I don't know, my son just turned 3. Yeah, maybe it's been 3 years. But Kevin was there yesterday. Kevin, the fan experience.
Well, you know, first of all, I don't want to take credit for the victory, you know, but they did look up and notice I was there. Right. You know, we got with the whole situation, my wife works with actually some Cowboy fans who are pretty well off, and they bought season tickets so they can go to the Cowboy
so they can go
game.
Heckle all the, and they sell the other
time. Yeah, they sell the rest of the time, and they just go, is kind of cool, right? Yeah. Because we have an opportunity to go with my lovely wife's birthday. And the Saints gave her a fantastic birthday present.
Good game to go to.
Here's the deal, man. And I've seen FedEx from
wait a minute. So for her birthday, she took. So you didn't take any of her friends. She didn't want to.
Well, the friends kind of thought they were going, but that's what they thought. And so I claimed spousal privilege.
Right.
And let me tell the friends now. I know you all listening. Next year is going to be the same thing too. All right. Okay, I don't know who they're going to. I'll look at the schedule when it comes out and let y'all know who you're not going to see, but stay there in the comfort of your own homes, right? But, you know, I was at FedEx Field when it opened. I was at the first game. It was a Monday night game against the 49ers, against Steve Young and the 49ers. Mm-hmm. And the thing about FedEx Field is it takes so much to get there. It takes so much for you to leave your home and get to your seat. It sort of takes something out of you before the game starts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I noticed was like getting into my seat, right? And of course, you know, this had nothing to do with the guys using the bathroom in the trees outside in the parking lot, right? You know, you figure it's a sporting event, that's going to happen. You know, you expect the extra security with the tragedy of this weekend in Paris, but all the people are very cordial. The workers there are very cordial, very pleasant. Mm-hmm. You know, cheering the team on, all that's enjoyable. But then it was that trek to the seats, right? That it took a while. It's a big place, right?
Right.
After I got to my seat, what I noticed most above
all... Did you guys drive and park there?
Yes.
I've always found that easy to...
Getting from public transportation, because of the way they've done things, it's kind of hard. Going to my seat, though, the thing that struck me was how many Saints jerseys I was seeing.
You know, that's one thing every time I've gone to Cowboys games, and of course there were tons of Cowboys games there, but tons of Cowboy fans there, but I've gone to the Vikings when they were here, and they were just tons of Vikings fans. Like, where in the world are
these
Vikings
people coming from? Right?
Yeah.
And you know, granted, people might need a little cash, right? They need to pay for the child's shoes or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But and they're selling their tickets. I don't know, but it seems too easy for the opposition's fans to get tickets to the games, right? You know, and a lot of times it's a pleasant experience for them. I mean, it's not like Philly where people are fighting. But I would say, without exaggeration, 1 out of every 10 fans there
were
Saints fans.
Wow.
And I just found that incredible.
Because the Saints aren't necessarily a team with a huge, huge fan base.
Not in this area, you wouldn't think so.
Right.
You wouldn't think so. And I know if you look at any other game in any other stadium, you don't see that.
And what was interesting, the local news actually interviewed fans going to the game about the extra security, and the one person that they quoted was a woman wearing a Saints jersey. And like, why wouldn't you ask someone who's wearing a Redskins at a Redskins home game? And so the reporter sitting there is like, you know, what did you think about the extra security? He said, I thought it was good because she's wearing this black and gold drapery. I'm like, why wouldn't you ask someone wearing burgundy and just the home team and you're the home news? Like, what are you doing? This is local. Like,
they were so convenient. They were conveniently located. You know, I saw we walked past Saints fans tailgating.
Yeah, what's the
how do you do that?
Did they have some good New Orleans
cuisine. I didn't trust them. They're still the opposition, right?
Okay, but besides that, and feel free to ask any question about the experience you like, because it was a very antiseptic experience. Okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the energy you expected a football game and teams, fans ready to cheer their team on. It was more of a do something good for us and we'll cheer for you. But it wasn't the atmosphere.
We want to cheer you on.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know if any of the listeners have had the RFK experience, mm-hmm. right? But if you go to a game at RFK, there is no amount of money mm-hmm. that can replace what that place meant. Now, I think that there's a technical reason for that, and it's the way that FedEx Field is built. Now, RFK and most stadiums will have a first bowl level, and then the second tier will sort of hang over the first tier so mm-hmm. that you're like, if you're in the first tier, you can have a level above you.
Right.
And like, it will protect you from the rain and stuff. But what it also does, it holds sound
right.
inside the stadium. Mm-hmm. FedEx Field is pretty much a bowl. It's right. a straight bowl. So the fans are up there. If they're making noise, the sound is just going straight up. It's not encompassing the field. And mm-hmm. and the players, the opposition, I don't think it's a true home field advantage of FedEx mm-hmm. because of that reason. Now, certain teams come in. The playoff game, well, it wasn't a playoff game. The game against Dallas that mm-hmm. was determined.
There was
twice that has happened in the past. It happened once in the Joe Gibbs era, and it happened in the RG3 rookie year where if they beat the Cowboys that game, they go to the playoffs. Yeah. Now, that has had true electricity in the stadiums. It was a true home field advantage. But more often than not, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's just not like that. Now, there's been some changes in the stadium because of the rules where they wanted to keep the sellouts. They removed seats and added standing room areas mm-hmm. that are so far away, you might as well stay at home and watch the game. You know, I don't know what those people are experiencing. I've been to FedEx Field once, and I was so high up, there were four rows above me. Now, we could see that there was a game going on the field. And
couldn't
see
what was happening.
You couldn't see the ball from that distance, right? I got eyes like an eagle. Couldn't see the ball from that. But all in all, I mean, it was a blowout win, but I'm saying that the fans are going to have to take over a little bit. The fans mm-hmm. bear responsibility to that. I can't tell you don't have a right to sell your tickets, to put them on StubHub or whatever. But
at
be
some
a
point,
fan.
You got to be there for the team. I mean, at some point, you buy the tickets because you are a fan and you want to go see your team play.
It doesn't matter if you were making a statement against the ownership and all that. You can't. Well, I mean, do whatever you want to your tickets, but don't criticize the team for not giving their all or doing their best to do that. Because fans have a point in it too. I mean, you'll hear you won't hear it on this show, but you know, you hear a lot of shows with ex-athletes mm-hmm. talking about the game, and they pretty much dismiss the role of the fan in the game. Mm-hmm. The fans don't know. The fans don't know what it's like doing this. Well, you might as well play in an empty stadium.
Right.
You might as well play in an empty stadium. Right. The fans don't have a part in it. Joe Gibbs used to use that psychological thing to it. He used to play that like a Stradivarius. Uh-huh. This is going to be a tough game. We're going to need all of our fans out there supporting us from the beginning to uh-huh. the end. And they say, we'll be there for you, Joe.
We'll be there for you.
But that relationship does not exist right now. And I'm hoping that there's something
that's
can
been
do
a, that's been a long criticism under the Snyder era that there needs to be some kind of outreach, some kind of reconciliation with the fans, because right now there's a huge disconnect between the team and the fans.
It's a tremendous disconnect. I will tell you how much of a disconnect there is. I saw many, 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 many more RG3 jerseys there than I saw Kirk Cousins jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
Many more. And I think that those are true fans too, because they remember what this franchise was like before RG3's rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
That magic that was there for that period of time. I mean, the team was only 9-7 too, but they played for something.
Right,
they played for something.
Well, you know what, and what's interesting too, I mean, when you look at generation, this is what happens when there hasn't been a real, you know, winning season in a couple of generations. I mean, there's no reason why young kids living in Laurel, Maryland or Columbia, Maryland should be Ravens fans. I mean, the Skins used to have this thing on lock, but now you see these young kids and some of their parents who aren't necessarily football fans, but they love to support their kids, they're supporting the Ravens and stuff too, simply because their kids are. And you've got a whole generation, you know, under 20 years old who swear by the Ravens because that's the only winning that they've had.
Right,
they even have parents who are Redskins fans, but the kids are Ravens fans. They love Joe Flacco show and they love everything, everything Baltimore. They loved Ray Lewis. And it's like this whole area used to be, but you haven't even really seen that transition with the Nationals, where you have people in D.C. who are still diehard, you know, Orioles fans because that was the baseball
team
that
they
had. And so there's no reason why the Redskins couldn't have had that reach, but it's been because of that. And look, you have teams all around who have storied histories, but have lost for years, but they still don't lose that fan base. You know, that fan base is still faithful to that team. And but that's because there's a concerted effort by the organization to reach out and have that connection with the fans. But when you're charging people to park at, you know, at fan day or whatever, you know, at during training camp, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're not going to get a good relationship with the fans that way.
Yeah, at some point you're going to have to show that you care. And I mean, you know, a winning team will override all that, but you're not there yet. And it would be a sign of goodwill. Now, there was a couple of things that disturbed me about the game yesterday. One thing in particular, you know, I know to me, it's not a controversy about the name. The name should be changed. The name is derogatory, right? For the national anthem, they had a gentleman that was there from wherever, and then they introduced another gentleman for some reason who was a member of a certain tribe, a Native American tribe. Now, let me say this about Native American. I was born in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get more Native American than that. You know? Mm-hmm. So I mean, the term to me should be indigenous American, the ones right. who were there when Columbus got here, right?
Yeah.
Indigenous,
yeah.
the ones who were already there. But the fact that they did that.
The ones who were here when Columbus discovered
it. Yeah.
We know he discovered this land because we were here and saw him discover it.
Yeah, we saw him discover it, right? Yeah. But for them to do that, for the team to do that to me,
it's so disingenuous.
It's cheesy, is what it was. Good. It was very cheesy. And you heard when it happened.
All of a sudden, we're for the Native Americans because they were under fire for the name. And so now we promote this stuff because it's a come on.
And there was a groan that came from the audience when it happened, right? Because you have some people who defend that name to the grave. You know, it doesn't mean it doesn't mean anything bad. But I tell people all the time, if you throw a rock across the street, you're trying to bust the window, but you hit somebody in the head, it still hurts. I don't care if you're trying to hit them or not.
That's right.
It still hurts, right.
And, and how can you tell someone what's offensive when it's not meant towards you?
Just don't tell me it ain't. So
I mean, you can make an argument for a name like the Chiefs, or the Seminoles, something like that, because it's an actual thing. But the term itself,
I went to Anacostia High School, and our mascot was the Indian, because there was a tribe at a particular area of town near the Anacostia River, Anacostia Indians, right? You know, so there was a push for them to change that name, right? And we had to tell the people, no, listen. You know, if the people of the Anacostia tribe say we change it, we'll change it. Not because you say you change it. You're from Boston. Why should I listen to you? Right. Okay, that disturbed me. Something else that disturbed me, they got this monstrous scream PA system, but they feel the need to tell the fans what they have to cheer for, right? Like if it's third and one and the opposition has the ball, it's third and one. Time to make some noise. You don't have to tell me that.
We know what down
and distance
it
is. It's on the scoreboard. We don't need that. I guess it's supposed to be part of the creative fan experience.
Yeah.
But they have to start growing fans, educating fans about the game. We're not dummies, man. Don't
treat
me like no dummy.
Yeah, I'm smart. You know, it's interesting because, football is actually one of the toughest sports to follow live. I mean, when you go to the stadium, like basketball is great live. Baseball is way better live than watching it on television, I think. But football, sometimes for folks who aren't, who are just your casual fan, sometimes it's hard for them to keep, because my wife's a casual fan, and we'll go to the game and she sometimes won't even realize a play has happened, and she's looking at the field like, wait a minute, what happened? And so sometimes it can be hard to kind of follow, but then again, you don't need that,
It's got to, but when the game was invented, that's why they put those markers on the field. Mm-hmm. That's what the chains are for, even on the scoreboard where it says second down and
you can always just watch on the screen and see what's actually happening.
So don't treat me like I'm dumb. I mean, they got to educate the fans, but that's why they invented the microphone on the ref, so we can tell you. Remember the day they just did the hand signal, which I thought was so cool because I knew what they were saying. I had to translate for the people at home, right? Oh, that was personal foul. Was holding, right? But now anybody could do it, right? Anybody could do it. So the fan experience, they're trying to create this fan experience. The big screen is wonderful. It's good for the people in the nosebleed section. They can actually see what's happening.
Yeah.
But the experience itself, the day I'm not I don't feel like I was at an experience, right? Mm. I was at a football game. RFK, and that's, you know, I'm living in the past. Like Bruce Springsteen had the song Glory Days, right? I'm living in the past. But if you want to improve on what we had in the past, do that. Right. But don't just change it for the sake of change and expect us to accept it. Mm-hmm. And we'll criticize the team if they call the wrong play or cut the wrong player or they come out without the fire in their belly. But you got to look at the fans' part in it as well. You have to look at what the fans' obligation is to the team. Mm-hmm. And the obligation doesn't end when you shell out your $500, whatever you do for the seat. Mm-hmm. Although maybe it should, right?
And look, that's a lot of money, man.
Hey, look,
yeah.
For $500, man, since RG ain't playing, he should be bringing me hot dogs, right? You know?
Yeah, he seems to be free during the game. Right. Why not?
You know, and Cole ain't doing nothing, man. Cole, I'm some chili cheese
fries. Yeah,
right,
yeah, exactly. 47-14 is the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Kevin's just talking about the fan experience at the game against the Saints, Kevin. You know, so yeah, you know, during the game, some of those pivotal points, what was it like then?
It was kind of dull, actually. Oh, it was dull. It was great early. When Deshaun caught that deep pass, right? You know, everybody felt good. The thing about it is the fans are reactionary, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's not like they're pumping it up. Come on, you can do it. Okay, let's go, yeah. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's wait and see what happens. Oh, it's something good. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of you know, let's go.
Giving the team some fuel and energy to make it play happen.
And it's because they've had the beat down for so long. Mm-hmm. It's been obvious to the fans what the team needed to do in terms of rebuilding the line and such. Again, I go back to the Shanahan's next to last year when Alfred Morris came on the scene, mm-hmm. and RG3 came. They had you know, before RG3, you didn't have a quarterback that could hit a guy.
No,
deep.
Absolutely. I mean, it had been years before there had been an actual NFL quarterback,
exactly.
You know, in Washington.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the way that Alfred was running, that was something that hadn't been seen, and it brought enjoyment.
It reminded you of the old school Redskins, you know what I mean, with the Hogs. I used to pound that ball. I mean, Alfred Morris is a throwback to what this team used to, you know, be.
Yeah, and I think once the players realize the history of the game, let me speak about history for a second. You walk through the stadium, there's a million TV screens there, yeah. A million screens, and they're showing highlights. So many of the highlights are from 1972, mm-hmm. 1982, 1987, the glory days, the winning years. Mm-hmm. You don't see too many highlights from the past 2 or 3 years, right? You know, you're not at the same place. But they want the fans to be content in thinking that, yeah, I remember those days, but I don't need you to remind me of that, mm-hmm. right? I need you to give me
something more
highlights.
Give me
some new highlights. Mm-hmm. Make it happen. And I think that over the years, it's taken some time. You haven't heard the name Dan Snyder lately.
Right.
You haven't heard. He's apparently handed over the operations to McClendon and Jay Gruden.
Purposely kind of taking a back seat.
Yeah. So we can't blame him. We're not saying this. The owner, I'm protesting the owner and all this. It's whoever's making these decisions. But a winning team will supersede all of that.
Oh, yeah, winning cures all. Because, I mean, look, we've had years and years of frustration. You get 1 year, that rookie year of RG3 and Alfred Morris. I mean, and all that was lost. And say, okay, you know what? New day.
All of us were getting
optimism.
We got a shot.
We got a shot now. And so winning cures all, especially when you have, despite, like we talked about with the season ticket sales, stuff like that, especially when you have, you know, a pretty loyal and dedicated fan base like you have here in Washington.
You do. You have the greatest fans in the world. Of course, I'm speaking biased, but look in the history of the book. If you have not seen the 82 season, just Google "We Want Dallas."
Right, we want Dallas,
and watch what the fans were doing to the stadium. That was passion. The passion isn't there. The passion is not there because it's too. There's no law against selling your ticket. Mm-hmm. But if you're passionate about it, I hope you're getting a good price for it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know,
right.
I hope you're getting good top dollar for it. If you're passionate about it, you're just passionate to be at the game.
Yeah.
And that passion will spill over to the fans and to the players. The players will feel that. The players on the opposition will feel it.
Sure.
Players don't care about coming to Washington. You know, like I said, there's no home field
advantage.
And we can change that as fans. Mm-hmm. We can change this. You know, this is something we don't have to wait for the next draft. We don't have to wait to see what the playoffs are. We don't have to wait to see what the record is. We just do it the next time we're on the field.
That's right. It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield giving you the fan experience. Kevin, when you were there, just one last question before we get out of this segment. After the game, after the big win, you know, what was the feel like headed to the car in the parking lot?
It was just as antiseptic. I mean, there were people happy. There were people cheering. But
it's time to go back home now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Hey, we saw a victory. Yay, every once in a while. You know, my wife's really happy. It was her birthday, and they threw up 47 on her birthday, right? You know, she's happy. Every once in a while, somebody would give a high five, right? Mm-hmm. One thing I would say, people are very cordial in the parking lot, right?
Yeah.
As far as letting you in and all that. but the passion still wasn't there, man. Yeah. You know, all in all, it was a good experience. I, you know, invested in a large screen TV at home. It would have been better because the bathroom was closer and the food was cheaper. Right. But it was pleasant. I've been there, and it hasn't been quite as pleasant. I've been there for losses. I've been there. I've been there. I was there the season opener last year, where 2 years ago, when they played the Eagles, Chip Kelly's first year. Uh-huh. I didn't know what they expected. Came out with that Oregon offense and just blew them away. It was a Monday night, and it was just sad. Everybody was just sad.
I'm trying to think. What was the last game I went to? It may have been 2 years ago, maybe three. Was the Dallas game where Dallas went up big. Well, they went up by a sizable amount in the first half. The Skins came back. Then it went to overtime, and the Skins missed the first field goal in overtime. Dallas came back and kicked the field goal and won that. And, yeah, it was pretty much – I mean, tons of Cowboys fans there. Just not a huge home field advantage, you know what I mean? Even for a Dallas game, which is interesting. And so a lot of folks left sad. A few folks, I won't mention any, left pretty happy. But anyway,
some of them did,
There were some that did.
These were from Philly. Right.
So it's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. We'll come back with a final segment. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. We'll be back.
Hi, listeners. It's Emily Kopp. Stay up to date on OPM news and other issues that federal workers like you care about. Follow me on Twitter at ECOPWFED.
This is Executive Editor Jason Miller. Follow me on Twitter to get the inside track on IT, management, and contracting news that matters the most to federal executives at JMillerWFED.
About as long as I can remember, we've been 3-6 for, last couple years. So, I mean, it feels great to, get over that hump. And we got a long way to go. We got a tough schedule ahead of us. So, I mean, this is only, the tip of the iceberg.
It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Big Trent talking about the difference between 3-6 and 4-5. And there's a difference. So when you're looking at the wins and losses, and you're looking in the standings and the columns, there's a difference between 3-6 and 4-5. So 4-5, you feel close to 500, and there's a chance.
You know, Trent's saying this is uncharted territory, right? We don't know what's happening. We just don't know how to feel about this one. But I know I was sick of 3-6.
That's right. The Redskins, 4-5 after 47-14 win. Beatdown. It's a beatdown edition of the Federal Football Report. Tuesday edition, by the way. Kevin Stanfield in. I'm Claude Jennings. So 4-5, like we said, hey, given the expectations, given the way that the team played the week before against New England, that this is a big win. This is a good win. Now, what it means in the greater landscape of the season versus long-term, we're not talking Super Bowl here, but at the same time, we're talking about a team that you can say, okay, they're building towards something. They're getting better. And so next week, we've got a big challenge against the Carolina Panthers.
Right.
Now, I know they're undefeated. Cam Newton, outstanding quarterback right now, but I don't feel as if you're looking at a team that's not beatable. They play an ugly style of football. And if you play an ugly style of football, you'll win a lot of games that with just pure strength and muscle and try to beat down the opponent. But then you play an ugly style of football, you can lose a lot of games that way too.
Yeah, you could. You got to admire the Carolina organization, the way they've built that team. They started out as a expansion team, built it enough, went to the Super Bowl, the legend of Jake DeLone, right? Lost in a close game to the Patriots.
He fell off fast. Remember that? Like there was a playoff game where he threw a ton of interceptions, and then it's like he couldn't stop throwing interceptions.
But they recovered from that. Recovered from that, and they rebuilt their organization, made Cam the first overall pick, and Cam has grown up quite a bit since he's been in the league.
And there's always been a lot of discussion regarding the maturity factor with Cam and whether he gets it as a player. And he's just kind of tread water and just kept consistent down the line and it's proven himself to be a good quarterback.
Yeah, that's right, because the organization
criticized a lot.
A lot of it deservedly so. They stuck with him, allowed him a chance to mature.
Hint,
burgundy and gold, hint. But
they're doing that. They're sticking with Kurt and giving him a chance to grow.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, they are. They are sticking with Kurt. Amazing how they found out that they could
do that at a certain time. But we only, look, it's only an hour show. Give us a 2 hour show. We're going to talk about that too. Yeah. But next week is going to be a true test.
It's going to be a true test. The defense is going to have to step up and play a great game because, again, you're playing a different. And here's another thing about Cam. They don't try to make him into anything he's not. They're not trying to make him into Peyton Manning or into Aaron Rodgers. They're letting this, like, the guy runs. He's a big boy. They let him do that, you know? And so you're facing a dual threat that way. They can run the ball. He can throw the ball. You're facing a pretty tough defense. And so, look, it's going to be a tough track. But, again, we're going to celebrate this beatdown edition of the Federal Football Report. The Redskins beat up on the Saints. And we'll handle, you know, next week week come. The Giants.
Show at a time, baby.
Look, one game back of the Giants. Cowboys 2-7 looking anemic. Romo's coming back. They think maybe they still have a chance. We'll see about that. And the Eagles tied for second place with the Skins. Things are good right now in D.C., right?
Only team in the NFC East that won on Sunday.
That's
only
right.
Team. That's right.
Well, we can keep that going, right?
That's
Let's try
right.
to
yes,
keep that
can.
Going
yes,
the
we
most
can.
We can. So we'll be back with you next week to talk about this Carolina Panthers game. Hopefully it's another beatdown edition of the Federal Football Report.